Right, in the studio with us now, a very special guest, Denise Roche, former Green MP, former Auckland City Councillor, current board member of the Waitemata local board over there in New Zealand, also looking out after us out here in the Gulf. As she always has, Denise, tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe. How are you?
We're well up here at Waiheke Radio. Thanks for giving up some of your precious Saturday morning. Politicians don't get a lot of free time, so very grateful. Thank you very much indeed. But the reason, Denise, I thought would be nice to have a chat this morning is you've just come back from a couple of days out at Ihumātau, and there are some Waiheke people out there joining the thousands that are building up out at the Stonefields out near Mangere to resist the development of sacred land by Fletchers into housing. Conflict around just who stands for who and what. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of the politics, just tell us what it's like out there at the moment.
It's a really nice, friendly, family-friendly vibe. It's pretty well organised. Like, we started going out there on Tuesday when the call came out, and that call came out to the trade union that I work for.
Yeah.
I work for First Union. So our some of our organisers and delegates were out there as soon as possible just to be, you know, basically stack up the numbers against what seemed to be a huge police presence. So it's evolved over the since Tuesday. So Wednesday there was still about 100 police there. But as the numbers of people, as the call went out, the karanga for people to come and join, it's actually sort of evolved into quite almost like a festival atmosphere.
Yeah.
There's toilets, you know, there's sort of portaloos, there's a porta shower, there's people bringing food, there's a whole sort of system for manaakitanga for guests, for people who are there. It's a little bit like Waitangi, the day before Waitangi, where they have the people speaking, and, you know, various people do get up and speak and may rant for hours. But it's a very accepting space. The police are very, are pretty much pretty calm at the moment. They're holding the line. And so in order for the people not to be pushed back further and further away from the land itself, there's a little bit of holding the line from
protesters as well.
Yeah.
They're calling themselves protectors, which I think is, you know, it's an ontological or even epistemological difference in that this is not a strike against power, but a protection of what they fear they're going to lose.
It's probably better in Te Reo Māori, which is
kaitiakitanga.
And in fact, yesterday the discussion was around the differentiation between kaitiaki and kaitautoko, which is the supporters like me, right?
Yep.
So the soul people, you know, save our unique landscape.
Pioneer Newton, Kia ana matata sipu, all these people who actually have been...
Who whakapapa there.
Who whakapapa there, and Kia ana matata sipu is in fact got her wonderful... she's a photojournalist, and she has a wonderful exhibition at the Marae there today about... what she calls kick-ass Indigenous women, and
there are just so many young women there. My heart has just been swelling with the beauty of these young people, and particularly the young women who are getting out and really supporting it. And it's been cool to see some of the schools when we've seen Hone Waititi Marae School come.
Yeah, I saw New Zealand's first whare kaupapa, first kura kaupapa, urban kura kaupapa.
Yeah, Ngā Tapawai with there, you know, Joe Hawke and Renee Hawke with there.
The original Bastion Point people. Let's go straight there. Is this for you, and I'd like to come back shortly to the technical, difficult politics behind it, but is this for you a disappointing sort of echo of 1978 and Bastion Point, or are we actually dealing with it better this time?
No, I think we're dealing with it the same. You know, Wednesday night the police were putting out fires, people's fires that they were using to keep warm. So, you know, they've all calmed down. There's been a bit of a kōrero, and that everybody's calmed down about it. But the kind of nuisance value was there, but there's a lot more discipline, I think, from the police, and there's certainly a lot more discipline from the protectors as well. And in fact, the protectors are very, very staunch in maintaining that whole kaupapa, the Te Whiti Oronga Mai peace kaupapa. It's drug-free, alcohol-free and smoke-free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of enforced by social norm.
Yep.
And, you know, the recycling, you know, it's a big issue for me.
So they got the green bin and the blue bin out there, Denise.
They've got all that stuff sorted.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I think it is a lightning rod. The whole thing is a lightning rod for the aspirations, particularly of young Māori. And what happened with Bastion Point was that, and what Joe was saying was that they were criticised. They were criticised by their kaumātua for taking such a, you know, seemingly radical stance of occupation. And this is, you know, 40 years later, and we're hearing the same thing coming from particularly older male Māori men, right?
Now, mana whenua out there, you know, those of us who haven't been out there can't do much more than interpret it through what we see in the media. So, but the mana whenua out there, according to the media, have kind of ticked off, or if you like, they're supporting the idea of housing development of some sort there. Rangatahi and Seoul and other kind of groups are very much against it. Can you help us get our heads around that?
Sure. Te Kawara Amaki have been, so that's one of the mana whenua there.
Right. Okay, one of several groups that whakapapa to the area.
Yeah, there are three. There are at least three. Mm. And, you know, so iwi politics are never simple. Just
well,
like
why would they be? Yeah. No politics is simple.
That's right. The other thing is that, and so they're recognised by council and by the Crown as being one of the mana whenua for that area. So they were involved in it, in negotiating with Fletcher's as a way of trying to mitigate what Fletcher's were doing, and they came to an agreement, but it's not an agreement that's held, that's agreed to by other people. The other thing we have to look at is when a treaty settlement happens and that recognition from council and from the Crown is applied to that iwi, it's a construct that comes about from the treaty settlement process itself, which is the Crown says that it will only negotiate with large natural groupings.
Mm.
So for hapu, they may not actually agree
with the wider iwi perspective.
Yeah. But in order to access the benefits of the settlement, they may have to participate. And this is what we're seeing with the Ngāpuhi settlement, is that hapu are saying, we don't want to be part of that. We want our own individual decision-making and autonomy, rangatiratanga, acknowledged and abided by. But the Crown says, well, we're not negotiating. So the Greens, which, you know, I'm still a member, and what Marama was saying yesterday and what the Greens have been saying for decades now, is that the treaty settlement process itself may actually breach the treaty.
Yeah, because it cannot or has not been willing to work in a more finely granulated way with hapu and has only tried to make things easier and quicker by dealing at a higher level than is truly just.
Yeah. And so, like, for one of the things that I love about the Greens is we've got these various four principles plus the Treaty of Waitangi acknowledgement. But one of them is around appropriate decision-making.
Mm.
So appropriate decision-making in this case rests with the hapu.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening out at Ihu Mātou, is that you have the whānau who are saying, no, we don't want this happening where we live.
Mm.
So, and it, to some extent you could, and the media has pitched it because older male politicians, Māori male politicians have pitched it as a generational dispute.
Yeah.
But actually there's kaumātua out there, there's kui out there.
Yeah.
There's people from that whānau and hapu who are there supporting the kaupapa. So,
and in fact, there's an estimation that there's somewhere around 10,000 people on the roads today heading there.
Yep.
This isn't about mana whenua in the end. This is about the relationship between the Crown and all Māori.
It is, actually. And it's and I do believe it's a generational thing as well, because
those young fighters who are coming through saying no.
Yeah, and we have, I believe we have, we have not served our young people well up to this point. We have not taught them the history of Aotearoa New Zealand. Mm. We have not taught them the history of the land wars of the Waikato, for example, how this land was actually stolen from...
And this land at Ihumata was stolen.
It was stolen. It was one of the first forays of the Waikato Wars. Was to
because it's on the way down to... And when they said you cross the river, it's war... They had already stolen land on the way to the river.
That's right. And, you know, so, you know, in 67 when, and this is 1867, yeah. So it was 9th of July 1863 that the people were forced off their land. And I know that because it's 100 years before my birthday. I'm not very good at history otherwise. But that's when they were forced off the land through down to the Waikato.
Yeah.
And when they came back 4 years later, it was occupied by...
Yeah. It isn't just land that was occupied by kāinga whānau and so on then. It's land that goes back in a way to the earliest tangata whenua memories of human existence in Aotearoa. Is that right?
Yeah. And
so this would be, and excuse me for the slightly crude analogy, but to put apartments there seems to me to be like proposing apartments or housing right next to Stonehenge. And to me, that for some Pākehā, that might throw it into clear relief for them why this is so important to Māori.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of our oldest, in fact, probably apart from the top of the north near Whakatū, it's one of our oldest archaeological sites.
Yeah.
They don't know... I mean, why it's so valuable is because of where it is. It's beautiful land.
Yeah, tell me what it feels like out there, because somebody came back from there yesterday and said to me, I had no idea how I would be emotionally affected by this whenua.
Yeah, it is really, really beautiful, and it's really old. You can feel the oldness. Mm. The walls, the brick, the stone walls of, you know, they've been placed there by hands that put those stones there hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Mm.
That's not the farmer walls, that's the other walls. There is a little maunga, there's puki iti and there's puki tāpapa, the little remnants of volcanoes. One was is flat, completely flat, because it was quarried, so it was complete. It was destroyed.
Mm.
And it's this beautiful vista when the sun comes up and the fog just sort of rests, you know, in the distance. It's this magical kind of feeling about it. The village of Ihumata itself is like, it's like Kaio, you know, it's like, you know, it's like flip and run down, and yeah. It's like it's the river, the little awa that is absolutely polluted. So there's a...
Yeah. And it was the Sole people who first pointed out the pollution of this river.
Absolutely.
This whānau who's been working to clean up the area already for decades.
Yeah, and they've endured Pukitutu Island, the sewage ponds.
Yeah. Well, now, and in a sense, the people in East Auckland can be very thankful that Robbie stopped those ponds going on Browns Island, which was the original proposal.
Yeah.
I remember Mike Lee telling me this years ago. Robbie stopped that and got it shifted to Mangere, and then the whānau out there had to put up with it until it was finally cleaned up by water care only 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, so they've been dealing with Auckland shit for a long time.
Yeah, nicely put.
Yeah.
So
it's a lovely vibe. I mean, I think they've got musicians turning up today. I think they've got Lady Six. They had
Lady Six, Dan Walker. What's his name? That other guy, Peter.
Teeks. Oh my God!
Yeah. Peter Stavelli is sitting here riding shotgun with me this morning. She's in love with Teeks.
Oh yeah, no, me too. Oh, that's the old lady thing for young boys. He's a beautiful, beautiful musician. It's a really nice vibe. I sort of got a bit concerned with the framing of the Prime Minister last night about being peaceful and all this sort of thing. It is peaceful.
Mm.
And I have the utmost faith that the discipline that Sole are requiring of people, that will continue.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, people do get a little bit hot-headed about it, you know, like stopping the traffic and Dunedin or in Wellington.
Yeah.
And shout out to...
Oh, I know, and Dunedin, apparently they stopped the motorway or something.
Yeah, well, they stopped it. I think it was Thursday night, they stopped the traffic on George Bolt Drive as well.
Right.
But, you know, this is all about... These are legitimate protest mechanisms and tactics and these are young people who have been learning, you know, direct non-violent direct action.
Yeah. It's lovely hearing it going back to Te Whiti and sort of because, you know, Māori were actually behind non-violent protest way before India. Mahatma Gandhi made it popular across the empire. Māori were the leaders of direct non-violent protest, and still in 2000 and nearly 2020 they're having to find that self-discipline to be peaceful and determined all at once.
I think they're doing an amazing job, actually. So
this has been
I would encourage people to go there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, would you say that Waiki people, you know, don't go out there and add to the burden of being fed and so on, or is it really that open?
It is really that open.
Okay.
I'd pace it. Yeah. I think this it's not an occupation. It's a what is it? A demonstration. I think this is going to go on for a while. I'm concerned about the cost, actually, in terms of the cost of the police force. We're all paying for that.
Yeah.
And they've already been there since Tuesday, and we're looking at it's going to go into the millions, and I think they can actually just go home.
Yeah, well, they probably could, couldn't they?
Yeah, but you know the place they've had on that land, they've had Pania and the Soul Group have been living there for what, 3.5 years.
So that's what I wanted to ask you. So this has come to a head because Fletchers have moved in with an eviction notice, and of course now there's a police line and a protester line. So the media have arrived with conflict pictures and conflict stories, but in fact, Soul, this has been a long, slow burning fuse, and Soul has been on that land raising these issues for 3 years now.
Yeah, more than 3 years, and they've done a really good job of trying all sorts of different ways to get a resolution, including a petition to Parliament, right?
Yeah.
And it's only grabbing the Prime Minister's attention now because of the evictions and because of those conflicts.
So what about that idea that Jacinda Ardern raised, first of all, that the government couldn't walk over the mana whenua who supported it to help the other protesters who didn't support it, because that would be interfering in Iwi politics? Why is it now suddenly okay for her to come in and say, look,
the Crown has been interfering in Māori politics since day immemorial, really? That's what the whole treaty process has been.
So can I put it on the table? Are you really disappointed with the Labor-led government at the moment?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I'm totally disappointed. And, you know, Marama Davidson has been trying to get this on the table and taken it to Jacinda and Calvin for months now.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so in a way, the fact it's come to a head is really in part down to the government.
It's the Crown occupiers.
The Crown, yeah.
It's the police.
Yeah.
Having the police there to enforce the property rights of Fletcher, who are going to develop and ruin the land.
Well, yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's a value judgment. Some people would say they're going to improve the land.
Of course. That's what Kawarau Amaki say. They don't say that. They say they want 40 houses.
Well, we need housing.
They do need housing.
But it doesn't have to be there.
Well, they could actually sort of start with the housing that they've got and improve the housing that they've got, which is really crappy if you go through the village.
Yeah.
That's not Iwi, that's also the Crown, you know? So it's kind of like, I totally understand Te Kawarau Amaki making that deal.
Yeah, well, right? I mean, it was going to happen it probably looked like it was going to happen anyway, so they were trying to get the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they've said that they will, you know, 8 hectares of it would be set aside for reserve, etc. But again, it's way too close, and what they're building on is the archaeologists haven't actually had a go at it either.
Yeah.
And they want to.
It's Wahitapu.
It is Wahitapu.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that the government saying that they can't interfere because they can't go against Kawarau Amaki, I think they're probably more concerned about Fletchers, actually.
Yeah, well, that, yeah.
Right? So, and I think that both the council and the Manukau City Council had been looking at buying that land for reserve purposes back in 2007.
Well, can we re-spark up that idea?
Yeah, we should be. Mm. And it should be council and government, right? And mm. And in fact, that would be the solution.
Mm.
But and you know, the government does buyouts of all sorts of different things. They spent yep. $1.2 billion bailing out the investors of Southern Finance when that bank yep. went tits up.
Yeah.
And they didn't even lose their land, but maybe it was because they were a different type of
yeah.
people from yeah. the disenfranchised and the brown.
Yeah, that's you know, frustrating and depressing in 2019, really. But there was a really nice comment on Facebook, not nice, it was a really poignant comment on Facebook just after Jacinda said that the Crown couldn't interfere, and somebody said, well, with a picture of the police, well, who are these buggers working for then? Which yeah. I think is the point you're trying to make,
yeah,
too,
that
the Crown, in fact, is involved by protecting. I mean, if it's an eviction notice, if under the law an eviction notice can be served, then perhaps the police do have a duty to back that up.
Yeah, but we know that the law is unjust, because, yeah. and we know the law is unjust, because the law is what legalized the land there being stolen from,
yeah.
you know, from Māori in the first place.
So there is no justice to protect there.
No.
No, that's right.
And direct action which is, you know, you go out there and you stay out there and you support the kaupapa.
Mm.
That is what is having the impact. And I think the fact that we've got hundreds and thousands of Māori, particularly young Māori, doing this mm. is a real wake-up call for particularly a Labor government.
Yeah.
A Labor-led
Let's
government.
Face it, Labor's not in power without Māori in this country.
That's right.
So there seems to be a sort of failure to acknowledge their support base here.
Yeah, actually, you know, they need to be very, very, very grateful to the Waikato, to the Rotorua Māori, who voted to get rid of my cousin, my whanaunga, Te Uruwera.
All right.
To Ururoa.
Flavel,
yeah. To, you know, when
Te Uruwera was the guy who sat too close to the fire, wasn't
that's
he?
He was. Yeah. So, I mean, basically getting that seat back to Labor is what, you know, that they hadn't had the number.
Yeah, right.
And also, you know, I was there when various Labor ministers have made promises to at Ratana. You know,
there was another comment about Jacinda, and I thought it was a reasonably interesting one, was from Catherine Delahunty, who posted on social media, "Prime Minister, now is the time to step up around the rhetoric at Waitangi."
Yeah, that's right.
And I thought that was, one of the things that in the media that we should be doing is holding our leaders to account around what they promise, and then do they deliver it?
Yes, well.
And I think that she hasn't. She hasn't delivered on this.
No, that's right. And what she did say at Waitangi was that, you know, that first Waitangi after she was elected, which was last year, was that she did expect to be held to account when she came
she
back.
She said that, I
she
remember.
Did, yeah.
Hold us to account. Okay, yeah. Now's the time, Prime
now's
Minister.
Now's the time. How's she going to hold your head up there in 6 months' time, you know?
Some people haven't done enough reading and might think, nah, treaty settlements, that sorted it, hasn't it?
No.
Isn't it right that on average treaty settlements, perhaps you can help us with this having been in Parliament, but treaty settlements in average represent 4% of what was confiscated?
Probably less.
Probably less than
4%. More like 1%. The one that was settled this week, I think it was like 17 million, it's like nothing.
It's a drop in the bucket, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, we're talking like, you know, the land that is returned, I don't think I've heard of one that's gone over 200 hectares, really.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and when you consider the millions of hectares that were confiscated, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's an economic base that was ripped away. The other thing with treaty settlements, so I used to be the chair of the Māori caucus for the Greens, so there we had four Māori MPs. So I was involved in quite a lot of the treaty settlements as Māori Affairs Select Committee.
That must have been fascinating.
It was a privilege.
Yeah.
It was a massive privilege. Actually, being an MP is a privilege, but
sure.
To serve on the Māori Affairs Committee and to serve on the treaty bills is a real privilege. And, I went to Parihaka for the apology from the Crown, which,
That must have been moving.
It it was life-changing, really, in terms of really getting to grips with how the impacts of colonisation, how they continue and echo down the generations.
And how, in a way, all despite our best attempts to fix stuff, we reproduce these injustices year after year after year. Ihumata might be a great example of that.
It is. And it's one of the reasons why our union is supportive of the Kaitaitoko is basically because colonisation is a form of injustice that continues. Mm. And as with the crimes of capitalism and inequality, they're inextricably linked. Mm. So it's part of our community outreach that we do this and support each other, which is, that's basic Taitoko and Te Ao Māori. So, so it's nice to be able to work where I get to have my values, aligned.
I could talk about this all day. It's 11:57 and the show finishes in 3 minutes. Denise Roche, thanks for your time this morning. Thanks for helping us understand what's going on out there and painting us a picture of the, I don't want to say occupation either because it sounds like they're on somebody else's land, but the protest out there, there's a big concert out there today, lots of Māori performers, there's a lot of aroha out there, perhaps some Waiheke people would like to go out and experience it.
Yeah, and a big shout out to the Waiheke people who are already out there.
Yeah, exactly. Kia ora whānau. Denise, thank you so much.